You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
You are Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox from Pro Football Focus and BearsWire.com, part of the USA Today Sports Media Group. We're here once again to give you a little bit more Bears talk in the final weeks leading up to training camp. It's almost here, and we're plowing our way through these Chicago Bears early regular season schedule previews, wrapping up the AFC East today with the Buffalo Bills. I'll be joined by Nate Geary from WGR Radio in Buffalo. He does pre- and post-game work for the Buffalo Bills games out there, and he's going to help us break down a lot of the big changes that Buffalo's kind of gone through this offseason, maybe some similarities to the Bears, kind of like we saw with the Jets in our last podcast. We'll talk about the plan for Josh Allen, Nathan Peterman, and A.J. McCarron, and who may end up starting at quarterback there, because that one's still pretty up in the air. We'll talk about some of the changes that they made defensively and the big improvements there, and perhaps maybe them not doing as much or even necessarily enough on the offensive side of the ball, and we'll kind of get a feel for, okay, where exactly do the Chicago Bears compare to what the Buffalo Bills should be bringing as we get closer to the middle of the season. Joining us now on Locked On Bears is Nate Geary. He is on the radio in Buffalo at WGR Sports Radio 550, and he writes about the Buffalo Bills for CoverOne.net. You can follow him on Twitter at Nate Geary WGR, and that's G-E-A-R-Y. Nate, appreciate you taking some time out of your day to come talk Bills with us.
Of course, man. It's what I do. It's kind of the offseason, obviously, but we are chugging forward towards training camp, like 2.5, it feels like 3 weeks. We're going to really be talking football, and it's exciting.
Yeah, you know, I'm sure you're going through this time of year too, where there's not necessarily a lot of new stuff to talk about. So that's why we're looking ahead at the regular season schedule here, plowing through the AFC North, and these teams the Bears will be facing back to back to back. It wraps up with the Buffalo Bills there. What is the general feeling about this team this offseason? Because coming off of what I felt like was a weird 2017 season, you know, they trade the Marcell Dareus and they kind of shed some pieces and still end up making the playoffs at 9-7. So how is that kind of transitioned here into the feeling for the team this offseason?
Well, they're sort of like the Bears. I mean, a team that has been, at least for the past half decade, one that has been trying to rebuild on the run. It just didn't work, you know, for you guys, John Fox, and that sort of slow rebuild with Mike Glennon coming in, and then things change quickly, obviously, with Mitch Trubisky. But, you know, here it's going to be a similar situation. Obviously, drafting Josh Allen gets your cornerstone on the offensive side of the ball, or at least what this organization hopes is the cornerstone on the offensive side of the ball. They also get their defensive cornerstone at Tremaine Edmonds, which are two really big pickups in what I think are going to be sort of your building blocks on each side of the ball. But in terms of expectations for this season, man, it's an interesting one, because I think if you ask the national media, you'd probably get a lot of this team's going to be drafted number one overall. And to not try to sound like a homer, because, you know, truthfully, I looked at last season, last offseason and this one are pretty similar. You look at a team that was really sort of devoid of talent at the top anyways, slashed through two of their top first round picks from, you know, the previous regime in both Marcell Dareus, as you mentioned, and Sammy Watkins, two types of players that teams are now trying to build around, at least in Kansas City with Sammy Watkins. So they lose those players, and as you mentioned, still figure out a way to go 9-7. And maybe the most interesting season that I can remember during this, during what was that 17-year playoff drought, where you had a team that at the beginning of the season starts off really quick, you know, starts off as a 3-1 team, and you're thinking, wow, they just beat the Falcons. Is this team actually for real? You know, is Tyrod, here we go with all this. And then they go through that stretch in the middle of the season where they get outscored by like 200 points in four games. And you're wondering, well, what happened to that team in the beginning of the season? And then they figure out a way at the end to win those division games and sneak their way into the playoffs, thanks to Andy Dalton. But yeah, man, I would say it's a lot like last season. I think this is a team that's probably poised to be in that 6-8 win territory, strictly because Sean McDermott, the head coach here, he found ways to win last year with a really conservative offensive coordinator who simply didn't want to take risks, went to a running scheme that simply didn't work on the offensive side of the ball with the offensive lineman they had and the running back that they had. So this year, with a new offensive coordinator, Brian Daboll, coming from Alabama, going to be more of a shotgun-based offense, I'd think. But obviously, it's going to be tailored to who's playing quarterback, and I just don't think that's Josh Allen at this point.
Yeah, what's I guess, the landscape of that situation? Because, like, from the outside, to me, like, if I was a Buffalo Bills fan, I would be pretty, I guess, upset with you know, A.J. McCarron coming in, being an unproven quarterback, some shades of Mike Glennon there, maybe. I wasn't a particularly big Josh Allen fan when it came to the draft, and we only saw a little bit of Nathan Peterman last year, and that didn't go particularly well. So I guess, what's your confidence level that the Bills will be able to get some level of consistent play under center this year?
I don't have a lot of confidence in the consistency level, to be quite honest with you. But I think the move to not sign one of those guys, those Bradfords, you know, you talk about maybe trading for Nick Foles had been brought up, but the idea that they waited out the market, they slow played the market, they let everyone else overpay, you know, Mike Glennon and Bradford both get a pretty penny to go to Arizona, a team that could put some money into their quarterback position. However, the Bills were in a difficult spot. They felt the best way to stay competitive with the limited funds they had, considering they lead the league by basically the top five dead cap teams in the league. You could combine them and they still don't have as much dead cap money as the Bills. 46, I think, million of dead cap space this year. Most of that's right. So what that is, you're seeing a lot of the roster turnover and the ramifications of that. But they, instead of going out and paying a quarterback $18 million a year, they waited out the market. They got the last remaining guy at a deal. I mean, A.J. McCarron's making $5 million this year on the books. Like, that's a low number considering he's going to fight for a starting job. I think that was a vote of confidence for Nathan Peterman. And people on the outside are saying, well, what the hell are they throwing a vote of confidence behind Nathan Peterman for? He's a guy that threw five interceptions in the first half, maybe had the worst first half of football as a starting quarterback in NFL history. And I think a lot of people in Buffalo are feeling the same way. But there's a reason that midseason, during a playoff run, during a season where maybe they had the best opportunity to make the playoffs in 17 years, they benched their starting quarterback. It was because they thought Nathan Peterman gave them a better opportunity to win through the air. They're the 28th passing ranked offense in DVOA last year, 32nd overall in total yards. So this is an offense, a passing offense that literally, I don't think could get worse. You know, Tyrod Taylor at times last year was playing full games and throwing for under 100 yards. And those were the sorts of things that ultimately led to the move to Nathan Peterman in the first place. So they felt something about him in that, you know, they basically benched their quarterback for him. But now I think what they're seeing after the five interception performance is a guy that came into this offseason ready, as a guy that many people that were at mini camps this offseason were noticing that Nathan Peterman had the best grasp of the offense. He was taking guys to the side and sort of telling them their duties and telling. So not only does he understand his job in this offense, he's understanding his teammates' jobs. And honestly, you know, if you follow football, you know that that's what your quarterback's asked to do. And so far, he's the one of the three guys that has shown that ability. They've all really had the same amount of time with this playbook. So it'll be interesting. But I think Nathan Peterman right now is sort of the class of this quarterback room. And I know that doesn't boost a lot of confidence for a lot of people. But I'll tell you, we're very aware that this is probably the worst quarterback room in the entire league. I don't think there's really a worse one. But at the same time, there's a lot of upside with Josh Allen kind of lurking in the balance.
Coming up next on Locked On Bears, I'll ask Nate about what the plan is here at the quarterback position for the Buffalo Bills and whether or not we could see Josh Allen on the field when the Bears take them on in Week 9. Keep it locked on Locked On Bears. We're talking Buffalo Bills here with Nate Geary from WGR Sports Radio 550. Nate, what do you think the plan is? I mean, do you get much of an inkling of whether they, you know, intend to fully sit him for a whole first year, or is it just kind of when he's ready to be the best quarterback in the room, he will play?
It's a good question. I think in the perfect world, the latter is true. I think, you know, Sean McDermott, Brandon Bean would probably want him to be the best in the room to play. The problem is, I think he is. I think in terms of raw talent, what he can do behind what I think is going to be a slightly suspect or a work in progress offensive line, they're going to need a quarterback that can move around a little bit and create outside the scope of the offense. That's Josh Allen. That's why he was drafted 7th overall, because he's a player that can not only throw the ball all over the football field, but create and has that athleticism that the other two guys on the roster simply don't have. But I think the plan is right now to try to let him sit as long as possible. I mentioned them building the defensive side of the ball. This is a defense that, truth be told, I think a lot of people are feeling very optimistic about going into training camp this year as potentially a top 10 unit. It was a unit that sort of middled last year as a total defensive unit. Obviously, in the first eight games last year, they were turning the ball over at a historic rate. That sort of evened out towards the end of the season in the second half. But what they did this year in the offseason was add Star Lotulelei and Harrison Phillips in the draft, the defensive tackle from Stanford, who was sort of known as his wasn't a great physical guy, but a technician in terms of what he can do in the trenches. They had Trent Murphy, a defensive end out of Washington, who's going to add some good defensive end depth to this team. So what they did is they rebuilt the one area of weakness with that limited funds that they had, because obviously we talked about that dead cap. They put those funds into the defensive line to keep their first round pick Tremaine Edmonds upright, but more importantly, to add to the defense that they already felt was close. So now they've added to a really nice unit defensively that doesn't have a lot of money wrapped up in their cornerback position. Tre'Davious White, maybe their best players on a rookie contract. Micah Hyde, maybe the best value in the league. Same with Jordan Poyer. Those two safeties ranked out as Pro Football Focus's top five safety group, maybe one of the best in the league, considering Seattle's has sort of fallen apart. So, you know, the defense is really where we're focused on this year. And offensively, it's just going to be whether or not they can keep up.
It seemed like, in addition to Tyrod Taylor's, I guess, conservative nature, the supporting cast was lacking, particularly, you know, in the offensive line and even at the receiver position. Do you feel like they did enough to upgrade this offensive line, you know, with Russell Bodine coming in at center? And I know they added Marshall Newhouse as a potential swing tackle guy who can move around a little bit. And even a wide receiver too, Jeremy Curley, but it seems like at both of those spots, they're waiting on some younger players to maybe develop and improve. I guess, where's your confidence level sure. in the supporting cast outside of, you know, LeSean McCoy and Charles Clay, sort of the guys, you know?
Yeah, no, these are, you know, sort of what we're looking at right now. We're looking at how does, have they taken a step forward in terms of the supporting cast and at the quarterback position compared to what they gave Tyrod Taylor last year? I tell you from the start, you know, I do Buffalo Bills pregame show on WGR, and really from week one, my co-host and I, Jeremy White, really sort of scratched our head on how this offense, this timing and rhythm-based offense, was going to fit Tyrod Taylor's game, because we just didn't see it. There wasn't that fit there. Tyrod is sort of the outside of the scope of the offense. He really thrives when things break down and he's able to use his athleticism and his arm strength to his advantage. However, when you're talking about asking him to play the position the way it's designed, inside the pocket, nuanced throws, throwing with anticipation, 3 and 5 step drops, and having that timing associated with your footwork and your release, none of those areas Tyrod really excels in. So what you need around him is sort of the perfect offense. And quite frankly, in the 3 years that he was here, his first year, maybe that was the case. You talk about Percy Harvin, Robert Woods, Chris Hogan, Sammy Watkins, Charles Clay, LeSean McCoy. That's a nice group of receivers and running backs right there, considering that's his first season. Obviously, injuries happened and he never really got to play that full season with that core group on offense. The next year, obviously, Percy Harvin kind of walks away, comes back. Robert Woods is gone. And obviously, Sammy Watkins then gets traded last offseason. So throughout his tenure here, he started with a really nice group, and then it sort of dwindled into last season, where he had maybe the most, you know, uninspiring group of skill position players in the league. They traded up to get Zay Jones. They were expecting a lot out of Jones, and he was sort of disappointing in his first season. Stats would suggest that. I mean, he had the worst drop rate in the league, and I think it started in week two against Carolina when he dropped a game-winning touchdown pass. I think that really sort of set his confidence back for the remainder of the season. Kelvin Benjamin, obviously, they traded for him midseason. The knee issue happens, and he's really not the same player that they had traded for. He's coming in healthy this season. Comparative to last season, though, I'll tell you, not much has changed. That offensive line, scary. You mentioned Russell Bodine, Marshall Newhouse. Those guys, to me, are worst-case scenario. Ryan Groy, to me, is going to step in place of Eric Wood, who leaves with a career-ending neck injury. At times, last season and the year before, when Eric Wood was injured and Ryan Groy was asked to step in, there was not much of a drop. So we're expecting not much of a drop at the center position. Obviously, losing Richie Incognito, our Pro Bowl left guard, that's an issue. They're going to move over, it looks like anyways, Vlad Dukas from right guard, their starting right guard from last season, over to the left side, and bringing back John Miller, who they drafted in the third round 3 years ago, really liked, had a good rookie campaign. Then when they changed offense with Rick Dennison, his view, his value, and what they thought he was in the offense really took a back seat. So they're expecting him to move back into that starting right guard role. And the rest of the offensive line is pretty similar. So I would call it a work in progress, Lauren, but I'm hoping that at certain spots, specifically the right guard position and the center position, that they're not going to lose much from last season.
The Buffalo Bills aren't the only team that's a work in progress right now. The Chicago Bulls are still in the middle of their rebuild in the NBA, and they made a pretty big move this past weekend, matching the restricted free agent contract for Zach LaVine, really locking in him in long term in Chicago. The guys over at Locked On Bulls are going to be breaking it down all this week. Highly recommend, if you are a Chicago Bulls fan, go check out Locked On Bulls, because they are your place for Bulls news and analysis all during free agency and the rest of this NBA offseason. And similarly, if you're in the market for some Cubs talk, Locked On Cubs is the place to be too. The Locked On Podcast Network here has podcasts for your Chicago teams, White Sox to be determined in the near future, but Locked On Bulls, Locked On Cubs, and Locked On Bears is your place for Chicago sports talk on the Locked On Podcast Network. Well, Nate, you already talked a little bit about the additions in the front seven there. You know, Star Lotulelei coming over from the Carolina Panthers, Tremaine Edmonds in the first round. I know that linebacker spot was particularly sore last year, but still some pieces in that defensive line from before, like Jerry Hughes and Kyle Williams. So, and of course, Shaq Lawson coming back too.
Right.
What level of improvement, or I guess to what extent are you expecting the improvement in the front seven this year?
Yeah, because that's where it needs to improve. I mean, you talk about I think they were 30th in run defense last year, most of which came between weeks 4 and 10. They just got absolutely torched by running backs last season, especially in that Saints game where they gave up nearly 300 yards rushing in that game. That was a total disaster. So yes, the front four getting tremendously better, in my opinion. Obviously, Star Lotulelei, a lot of people think they may have overpaid for him, but I think they know exactly what he's getting. He's not a statistics or an analytics darling. What he does is take up a lot of blockers. He's going to take up double teams. And that's what that position, the one technique, is going to be asked to do in this defense. He's not going to be asked to be a legitimate pass rusher. And that's why I think Marcell Dareus didn't work out when the new regime took over, is he is sort of used to playing the sexy one technique where he is really the anchor of the defense. That's just not the case in Leslie Frazier's and Sean McDermott's defense. This guy is really sacrificing himself for the betterment of the rest of the other 10 guys on the defense. You add in Trent Murphy, who I think is maybe another guy people think they overpaid, but has the ability to be the best pass rusher on this team along with Jerry Hughes. So you're talking about pass rushing wise, they have dynamic speed and athleticism at the two ends. You mentioned Shaq Lawson, as he's maybe the guy that's on the outside looking in right now. A lot of rumor in the offseason, he even heard it and he even acknowledged it during the offseason that there are trade rumors surrounding Shaq Lawson because he was a high number one pick, and he simply put has not put up the numbers that a high first round pick is expected to have, especially at the defensive end position. And especially because when Rex Ryan drafted him, he was playing that 3-4 outside linebacker position that he wasn't comfortable playing. Well, fast forward to 2017, he was supposed to be moving to a position that he was used to playing in college and at Clemson, and then he thrived in, and he just didn't thrive in the position last year. So he's going to be fighting for snaps this year. And you mentioned Tremaine Edmonds, obviously up in the middle. You know, a lot of people might look at Preston Brown and say, well, the Bills had the NFL's leading tackler last year at Mike Linebacker. Why wouldn't they re-sign him? Why did they think they had a problem there? Well, sure, he was really leading the league in tackles, but he was leading the league in tackles that were 5 yards past the line of scrimmage. You know, he wasn't really the dynamic athlete they needed in not only coverage, but on third down, he was taking advantage of a lot. You talk about Tremaine Edmonds, and I think maybe more so, more than anybody, the Bills fans are most excited to see what this kid has to have. 6'5", 250 pounds, and can run a sub-4 6'40". The athleticism, the length, he is going to be an interesting player for the national media to watch. I think he's a rookie of the year candidate, absolutely, in this Bills defense, because he's going to be playing every down, and he's going to be a big part of this defense.
Yeah, I know there were some Bears fans that were even interested in Edmonds over Roquan Smith.
Yes.
They ended up taking, and certainly in this kind of Leslie Frazier Tampa 2, you know, traditional kind of defense, the Brian Urlacher comparisons coming out a little bit for him and sort of running the middle of the field that way.
Absolutely. They really started the second he was drafted. And especially you mentioned the Tampa 2 and that deep safety, or that, you know, being able to play at safety depth basically is what you're asking your middle linebacker to do and cover the middle of that field. And you're talking about a guy that just his optics, his 6'5" frame, that in itself is a big jump over what we got from Preston Brown last season, but it's that athleticism. It's the instinct. It's the flying to the football. And more importantly, the moves in the offseason with their limited funds. And I think Brandon Bean, in his wildest dreams thought he'd end up with Josh Allen and Tremaine Edmonds in this draft. And I thought they had a plan in place to figure out what they were going to do at Mike linebacker because they hadn't addressed it in free agency. They put most of their funds in that defensive line. I think the thought process was is whoever we have back there is going to have the opportunity to play freely. He's not going to have double teams coming up from the line of scrimmage up to the linebacker level. So whoever we put back there, let's keep them clean. And I think they just got really lucky and Tremaine Edmonds fell to 16 and they felt compelled to trade a couple more future picks. Listen, they had the capital. I think now you have two first round picks that could go down. Hopefully, is this what we're hoping to Buffalo anyways, as being the Baltimore Ravens type, the Ray Lewis and Orr picks, you know, the types of two Hall of Famers that propel this franchise for consistent winning for the next, you know, decade and a half.
Were you surprised with how they handled the cornerback position, particularly signing Vontae Davis early on and choosing not to bring back EJ Gaines? Because it seemed like, you know, you talked about it a little bit. It's such an encouraging young secondary. Tre'Davious White's so good, and those two safeties continue to fly under the radar. I thought Gaines was a pretty good young player, and, you know, there was some thought, I think, that he could get a big deal, but he doesn't. Signs of, what is it, a one-year deal with the Cleveland Browns. Were you surprised with how that played out, or was there something else about Gaines that they were just trying to move on from?
I was really quite surprised, to be honest. He played really well when he was playing, and I think is maybe what this organization saw. And one of the most important things, and it's why Cordy Glenn, I think, was ultimately traded this offseason as well, was because availability is a big, big, big part of how this team evaluates players. Is, are they available? Because your best availability, you know, a lot of these guys that can't play, you're no good. You're as good as you are on the field. And you see guys like that just couldn't stay healthy. And Gaines goes from a system where he was expected to play zone, you know, 60 to 70% of the time. He's going and playing man-to-man in Cleveland. And I just don't know that Cleveland was the right fit for him. If I'm being honest, he took less money because he just didn't have the demand on the market that a lot of people thought he was going to have. But I don't think the Bills valued him because of his availability and his one-dimensional nature. He played really well in that zone last year, but you bring in Vontae Davis, and you have a guy who not only is experienced in this league as a top corner, but can play man and can play in the zone. And I think they wanted a little bit more versatility on their side of Tre'Davious White. And I think they got that. But I think more so, they got a veteran. Micah Hyde was really the veteran of that defensive back group. And not to take anything away from Hyde, because I thought he had a great season last year. I think they needed more of a veteran presence in there to really congeal everything. And the guy that nobody talks about, in my opinion, is Jordan Poyer. One of the more underrated players in the league. He came over from Cleveland as really like a special teamer, but he played corner, and his transition to free safety has been a huge, huge thing for this Bills defense. He's, to me, been more important than the other two, because without Poyer, they're just a safety and a corner. And he really rounds out the group. And I think Davis, we're excited to see what he can do in his first year, and maybe his first year being healthy in more than 3 years.
Well, let's take a step back and look kind of bigger picture at this Buffalo Bills season. You mentioned a little bit of the win total in the 6-8 type range, but what are you expecting by the time they get to, what is it, I think week 10, when they play the Chicago Bears? Is this going to be, or sorry, week 9, is this going to be still a potentially a Nathan Peterman-led team, or do you expect Josh Allen to potentially take over after a certain number of games this season, or is it just too early to tell?
You know, it's a good question, because listen, the beginning of their schedule is daunting the Bills. I mean, on top of having to play the NFC North early in the season, this is a team that is likely not going to have their quarterback situation fully figured out. But you look at, let's see, I'm pulling up the schedule now. You're looking at those first weeks. So they start on the road in Baltimore, then the Chargers, then Vikings, Packers, Titans, Texans, Colts. And then they play the Patriots, Bears, Jets, Jaguars. So like the beginning of their season, it's not conceivable to think that they might go into week 9 with 7 losses, like going into that. So you're likely going to see probably at that point a desperate team trying to keep their playoff hopes, slim playoff hopes alive. Week 9 could be the week that you start to see Josh Allen talks really heating up. It's going to be totally dependent on Nathan Peterman, AJ McCarron. Is what's the confidence level of those two? Because I think if Nathan Peterman wins the job, I think AJ McCarron's on the roster, because I think in all reality, they'd like to have Josh Allen in street clothes on the sidelines, not an injury away from having to play. So I think that they'd like to stay away from a scenario that is a Mitch Trubisky type, or you know, a Carson Wentz type, where he just beats the other incumbent or the veterans in training camp, or by midseason, they're just so inept that they need to make the switch. I think the Bills really like to stay away from that. But by week 9, I could see 6 or 7 losses on the board. I think the end of their schedule really helps them. Miami twice, the Jets twice in the second half of the schedule. Otherwise, you know, right. I mean, that's how I'm seeing them get to 6 or 7 wins. But it's going to be the AFC South. They're going to have to grind 2 or 3 wins out of the AFC South this year.
All right. Well, Nate, that was excellent Buffalo Bills analysis. I appreciate you taking the time out to chat with us. I want to remind everyone, you can listen to him on WGR Sports Radio 550 in Buffalo, and you can find his written Bills analysis over at cover1.net. If you can follow Nate on Twitter at NateGearyWGR. Nate, appreciate you taking the time out today.
No problem, man. Thanks for having me anytime.
Thanks again to Nate Geary for joining us on the podcast today to break down the Buffalo Bills. If you enjoyed our conversation and want to keep up with more episodes of Locked On Bears, make sure you're subscribed to the podcast on whatever podcast listening app you prefer. We're on pretty much all of them. You know, the new Google Podcasts app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can play us on your smart speakers too if you ask. I guess I'm not going to say it because I don't want to trigger your smart speaker if you're already using one right now. But if you have the Amazon Echo or the Google Home or whatever, you can find the podcast on there. You can just ask your smart assistant without triggering it here to play Locked On Bears, and it'll bring it up for you. There's plenty of ways to listen, plenty of ways to get your dose of Chicago Bears talk all this offseason. We're finally getting to the point of the schedule now as we go through these games where the Bears come into their stretch of NFC North games. You know, after they play the Bills, it's Lions, then Vikings, then Lions again, back to back to back. So we're going to start finally getting into some NFC North teams with our previews, talking some Detroit Lions and Minnesota Vikings this week. And maybe we'll squeeze some Bears talk in there too. You know, we're counting down the days here till training camp. Only a couple weeks here before things really get rolling. And I think the rookies report really in almost a week from now, from the time I'm recording this. So we're getting there, and we're going to be previewing it here alongside while we wrap up our schedule previews here. Only a handful of teams left with kind of all the division games getting plowed through here. So we'll get it done by the time training camp starts, and we'll get you ready for Chicago Bears training camp. I'm going to be down there in Bourbonnais for at least a day or two. Haven't locked that in my schedule yet, but if you're going to be down there, you can let me know on Twitter at Cox Sports One or tweet the show at Locked On Bears. I might try and pull something and maybe record a podcast live from Bourbonnais. I haven't quite looked into the logistics of doing much of that yet, but I'm sure hopefully I'll see some of you guys down there. I know I've got plenty of friends that'll be meeting down there from all across Illinois and even some Iowa Bears fans always make it out. Shout out to Nick Fish. If he's listening to the podcast, we meet up at training camp every single year. I'm sure Aldo Gandia from Bears Barroom will be down there, and we'll have a good time. We'll bring it to you here on Locked On Bears. Just another reason to subscribe if you haven't already, but I know so many of you loyal listeners are tuning in every episode. I appreciate you. I do this podcast for you, and I just enjoy bringing you some Chicago Bears talk and bringing you another reason to bear down.